Welcome to Dugout Study Hall, a remedial course in baseball stats and a proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I am not your expert layman, Matt Goodwin. He is off this week. But instead, I'm the person he loves to pick on, fake baseball economist Alexander Chase. In his stead, I have Pitcherless contributor Nate Schwartz for a conversation about how the first third of the season has changed our mind so far. Nate, how are you?
I'm doing really well. How are you, Alexander?
It's going pretty well here. So I'm sure, as an expert, longtime listener and all that stuff, you know that we love to talk about the weather here as we get started. I'm going to try not to do that for once in my life. It's good to have you on, though. It's funny. So, Matt and I, obviously don't live in the same city, and we do. So how has, DC been treating you this spring?
It's really funny. I just started a new job a couple of weeks ago out of college, and as someone who is very much a winter person and likes the cool weather, I've decided that Washington, D.C. is the place that I want to be, and somehow I'm going to tolerate 95-degree weather consistently, and I'm already not a fan.
Yeah, it's been a weird thing for me to realize. I want to live in this exact part of the country. It's, exactly as hot as I can regularly tolerate, having been, 105 max-out person, in Texas as a kid. But it's also about as cold as I regularly want it to be. It's definitely, the mama bear of the United States in that regard. Also, no wildfires. So, no West Coast options, because I'm trying to avoid my house catching fire in the future. So
that's usually a good thing, yeah.
Yeah, so California-based folks, Colorado-based folks, I really hope y'all are staying safe. It's, not something I really want to kid about, but it is unfortunately kind of where we have to be. I hope we can kind of get spared all of that this summer in terms of baseball stuff. How is the post-college stuff treating you also? It's interesting that we are probably both on the young side as people who care about fantasy baseball go. So that's not a question I would get to ask someone very often, but how have things been going for you?
It's good. It's really exciting to finally wrap stuff up. I figured out what I was doing next, and also having all of the pitcher list content and articles that I'm writing in the background and going along, it felt like a nice natural step forward, and I'm doing really well, and it's very exciting stuff.
Here, so I figure a good place before I bug you about the few odds and ends that I know I have to bug you about, why don't you tell us what you're all about, pitcher list wise, and what you've been doing since you joined the crew.
So I joined Pitcher List in December, writing for the Going Deep team. I'm mostly pitcher focused, but I was actually looking back on some of my previous articles, and I've written, I think, about more hitters specifically for some reason. I don't know how that happened, but I'm a very much a pitcher focused guy. And I've been able to do some fantasy content, some Going Deep content. I've written for the newsletter and active in the Discord. Join it. It's a great place to be. It's been great to actually meet all of the contributors at the site, you included. It's been a good couple of months.
Yeah, it's been fun having you around. I did, for those of you guys who don't know, manage to talk Nate and a handful of other people into starting up a Dynasty League that we've, I've made some odd notes about trades and my team being bad. And he is one of the people who's ahead of me in the standings, which is fun.
It's a weird league.
It's really
it's all over the place.
Yeah. It's funny how that sort of stuff is the thing that keeps my attention, just comes the chaos factor of it all. But yeah, from an actual paying attention to baseball and writing about it, I also know what you mean in terms of you think you're focused on something and then you just end up doing random other stuff. I wrote about relievers for a year. Every week. It was not something I was really jazzed about at first, and then I was this is kind of chaotic and fun, and that's kind of just been the tagline that's organized a lot of the work that I've picked up in the past. So I recently read your piece on Jordan Alvarez, which I thought made some interesting kind of points about just how luck works. There is a particular way that you group some data, and that's exactly as nerdy as it sounds, that I thought was really funny, that I'll bring up again later. And then you had a piece on Zach Gallen, which has aged pretty well because he's been pretty good. So yeah, among those or anything else, what is it you've kind of been most excited about writing or putting out there this year so far?
I think honestly, I've really, just as I started writing and getting into the space, putting out my just kind of brief, I do it in 20 minutes, breaking down a start on Twitter. It's kind of just a raw What do I think of a guy? What are they doing well? And basically going through my everyday process of looking at a Savant page and seeing, like, what do I like? What steps out to me? It's very nice to, you know, put it in a published article and get it out. And it is a good piece of work with nice data visualizations and stuff like that. But I spend a lot of my mornings or afternoons cruising through Savant pages and Fangraphs pages and leaderboards and, you know, what sticks out to me, and being able to put that out and, like, what actually gets my mind going. Maybe it only fascinates me, but I'd like to believe that there are other people who care for who's doing well in the fantasy baseball world.
I hate to inform you that you're on the right podcast then, because if there were, like, I don't know, an article for every 10 times I spent like 45 minutes just looking into, like, some dude and why he has been awful or not, I'd have like a lot more articles written than I currently do. I'm a bad habit of that. So yeah, this is unfortunately kind of like the place that any of my odds and ends of, like, hey, I checked out a dude and I want to talk about him end up, rather than like written, which is just a weird thing. So I get exactly what you mean about all that. I also know, for better and for worse, that you're a Cardinals fan. And because you're...
Definitely for better.
Because you're younger than me. I lived in Texas at the time. There's like an interesting, like, seminal but not seminal moment overlap here. You were saying before we got on that, like, the Brad Lidge, Albert Pujols home run that has haunted the nightmares of a lot of my friends from Houston, who will bring it up unprompted to me all of the time, was, like, not something that, like, really registers on, like, the fandom Richter scale for you in the same way?
It definitely does. There's a running joke between my dad and I after I gave up a home run when I was 11 years old, that the ball was sent into the same orbit that Albert Pujols hit that homer against Brad Lidge. And every now and then, like, driving at night, it'd be like, oh, hey, look, it's those two baseballs that have not come down yet. But yeah, no, that was probably to the unfortunate realization of how young I am to people listening to this, before my time of actually remembering baseball. But I do have just fond memories of literally every time I'd turn on the TV, he would have homered. And it's just like, I don't think enough people today recognize how absurd he was in the 2010s or the 2000s.
Yeah, I mean, like, there was a moment in the early 2010s. I have to, like, look back and actually recall it. Like, Albert Pujols was a good baseball player for the Los Angeles Angels. I don't know if he was a good baseball player for the Los Angeles Angels. They probably renamed something else. It's surprising at this point that they haven't had, like, a sponsorship in their name or something like that. But it's a whole other thing. But, like, yeah, like, I was, like, looking at, like, his page because, you know, he's old and it's fun for me to talk about people being old. And it just, it's something that I have to actively remember, is that he didn't fall off a cliff immediately. It kind of took him a little while. But, like, you do have those good Cardinals beating people thanks to Pujols memories, I am assuming, though.
Oh, yes, definitely. There are more than enough memories. I guess I'm lucky as a fan in that sense that I have as many memories of that. And it's, you know, childhood dream, or not necessarily childhood dream that he came back, because there was definitely some resentment after he left in 2010 or after 2011.
Yeah.
But I've come around, and it's really great to see him with Yadi and Waino on their retirement tour.
Now, my brain worms aren't, like, fully activated right now, and I'm not Googling yet. Did they win the World Series the year he left? Like before he left? That was before, right?
Yeah, they won in 2011 with Pujols playing first and La Russa managing. Then La Russa, quote-unquote, retired. And Pujols left to go to the Angels, and the rest is history.
Yeah. So I was living in Dallas at the time, and so, you know, that the whole thing where they almost didn't win that was very devastating to a lot of kids who became Rangers fans that same year, I can promise you. There's just not that same culture, even though, like, baseball is big in Texas. I assure you there are a lot of Rangers fans out there who have not yet discovered they are Rangers fans because the team hasn't won enough games. And it's very funny to kind of, like, contrast it against a lot of people who I know have these deep, deep resentments that they've been harboring since they were just, you know, like 3 feet tall. And, you know, I'm proud of them. I guess I'm proud of you then for that. So I didn't exclusively bring you on here to just talk about, you know, being vaguely young, but not always feeling that way. And our particular, just very strange league. There is like other people out there as well who may be listening to this and may be interested in the water world of baseball. I brought you on because I thought this was kind of like a good time of year to kind of check in on like the, I don't just do one thing. I don't just have one thing to plug. There's a lot of chaos and we have to actually start to make sense of it all with baseball. You know, we're about a third of the way into the season. It's starting to become that time where you actually look at the standings. People may actually make some notes that the Yankees are off to the best start and so-and-so, and people might care. So as we kind of like get the ball rolling here, I want to take a couple or look at a couple of our big numbers of the week. So I'm going to like put you very much on the spot and try to make you guess a couple of things. I'm happy to give some hints and guidance along the way. The thing I want to focus on first is how a couple different projection systems, those from FanGraphs and those from 538, disagree most on who's going to win so-and-so games for the rest of the year. So the first question I'm posing to you is exactly this. Which three teams' rest of season win totals do FanGraphs and 538 disagree on most? Who do you want to take a stab at first?
My first guess is going to be the Twins.
Tell me why before I tell you that it's wrong. It is wrong, but it's not them. What makes you think the Twins?
Personally, I don't think they're overperforming, but I don't think a lot of people had them in this position come June 8th. And I could see the projection systems kind of differing on where they stand right now and where they're going to go the rest of the season.
That is like exactly the sort of like line of thinking I had when I started pulling this all together. And if I remember correctly, they have essentially like the same win totals projected for both, which is an interesting kind of thing that I plan to talk about more in a second. But I'm going to let you take another shot. I'm going to give you like five guesses in total, if that sounds good. Who's your second you want to try out?
Let's see. I'm going to guess maybe the Dodgers.
You have got actually number one on the list with the Dodgers. And the reason there is really simple. They're projected to win a lot of games, and what makes for a lot of games differs really greatly. So FanGraphs projects them for 95.8. They're bold enough to add a decimal at the end, wins for the rest of the season. Whereas 538 has them at 101. And that kind of like, and I don't think 538 comes into like the parlance of a lot of people who like think about fantasy baseball. There's some people who think Nate Silver is not as good at things. But also, I think they do a pretty good job of like showing what their model does. FanGraphs is like Zips roster resource base, which I think has maybe like too bad of a reputation for the community, but we always use the stats. So I hope that's a window into maybe where the rest of this is going. Who else would you want to guess then?
I'll just go right back to the top and guess the Yankees as well.
They are second on the list. Yes.
I happen to see a couple of weeks, or last week, I was looking at some luck on Baseball Reference to see who's outperforming the run differential and underperforming. And I know the Yankees have been somehow underperforming their run differential so far this year, which
really
is
hilarious.
Absurd to think about.
So that's just to kind of give you guys at home who aren't looking at me highlighting the part of a rundown that Nate can't see here. FanGraphs has Yankees projected as of Wednesday morning when I pulled this for 99.9 wins for the rest of the season. 538 has him at 104. Again, a little bit bolder on both counts. So you got one more to get. I'll give you, I guess you got two more shots at it for a third team here.
For a third team. I'll go with the Angels.
You know, they were also one that came to mind. They have the exact same projection. So I have it back up in front of me. Rest of season, the Angels are projected for 81.3 from FanGraphs. And from 538, they are projected, oh, I got to scroll way more down than I used to for them, for 81 wins. So they despite the huge mountain of playoff probability they've lost in the past couple of weeks, they both land in the exact same spot with these two different ways numbers are crunched. For those of you guys, are you familiar at all with like how 538 does its like forecasting? Like for wins?
Not at all.
Okay, cool. It's kind of interesting, and it's something that gets stolen from like soccer and chess. So they like do an ELO based system where you like basically take points off other people, and it like changes your ranking, and their model tries to like make sure that like the number of points you take off of them actually helps them predict as best as possible. It makes a good deal of sense, and they do some like pitcher adjusting stuff. So like, you know, if all of a sudden your rotation has one fewer Jacob deGroms in it than it used to, things adjust accordingly. It's pretty nifty, and it like makes a good amount of sense to me intuitively. There's some people who might say like, you know, go put your actual money on it, like you cowards, because they are very aggressive in their odds is the end thing. Like Fangraphs is like very, very, very conservative in terms of like where everyone lands. But 538 ends up being, you know, pretty bold about where its projections are going to land. If you look at NBA finals forecasting, anything else, they're more inclined to call someone the favorite instead of just calling it a toss-up no matter what. With that in mind, I'll give you one more shot at the last person on the, or the last team on the list here.
I'm going to go back to kind of streaky and against expectation teams and guess the White Sox.
They are not it. I think they are also in the exact same prediction camp, but I want to check. I want to double check this. Fangraphs has them at 85.5 and 530 has them at 86 wins. Interestingly,
so both,
here. Yeah.
Both
so,
having them figuring it out as the season goes on.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, that's kind of like the interesting thing that I keep finding here is like, very different approaches. One is like a player hitter slash pitcher like forecasting based war, etc., very granular, and the other one kind of goes on the team level, and they both landed like roughly the exact same place with very similar playoff odds for both teams, or for all teams essentially. And it's kind of shocking to me that like there is this kind of like computer generated conventional wisdom that just appears out of thin air. It's not thin air, but you know, it's fun to pretend. And The last team on the list here actually is, I hate to say it for the handful of fans that they have who have been very loud and very good over the past few years, but the Kansas City Royals, who have been really
Ooh,
bad.
That was my next guess. I wasn't sure how bad people have adjusted them to be at this point.
That is exactly the theme of all this then. Yeah, exactly. It's like, how much are you willing to just ride the course of things, or how much are you willing to adjust to like change direction? And 538 has him at 62 rest of season, whereas Fangraphs has him at 65.8. So they're all like about four games different at the max end. I said earlier that I thought you did something kind of neat in terms of like some data set stuff in one of your pieces recently. So in that Jordan Alvarez piece, you noted that there was like 37 people who, since I don't remember what year, it's like about the past decade or so, who have 1,000 plate appearances and a 130 WRC plus. And you use that.
Yeah,
like,
it was.
What year was that?
Since 2010. I forgot the plate appearance threshold, but it was 130 WRC plus or better.
Yeah, yeah.
And it yielded 27. And this was for batting average on balls in play.
Yeah.
And it yielded 37 players, which I thought, for the sake of the article I was writing and looking at, you know, extended sample sizes of batting average on balls in play, that was a sufficient amount. And Jose Bautista had a 260 batting average on balls in play while holding a 130 WRC plus. I don't know how that's possible.
Yeah, no, I thought that was a really nifty trick you did. And I bring that up in this exact context because it's a big sample for a thing that, like, you don't really know. Like, is that a lot? Like, is four a lot? Well, for, like, differences in wins, it seems like it's a lot. For BABIP, in your case, I think that the context you brought up in is, like, Jordan's, like, career BABIP was like exactly in the middle of the set, and then his this season at like was like way off the charts below it, which I think did a really good job of showing that's like, yeah, we should expect this to not be the way it is currently. In that sense,
yeah, so, yeah,
yeah, like, I thought it was neat.
I just looked at it, because Yordan Alvarez, I mean, he has still been on a tear, so I don't know how much is this has changed in the the week, because it seems he has just not stopped hitting. But he had a 243 batting average on balls in play, which, for, you look at his Savant page, you look at just his surface level stats.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not going to hold.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm pulling up his page, and I'm sure something is not quite okay. Yeah, he's up to 281 on the year right now. So I think some
things... already literally jumped 40 points.
Yeah, it's that's the fun part of, like, I can't stop just trying to say everything's on theme, so I'm gonna try to stop. But yeah, that's kind of like a pretty
good
encapsulation.
It is on theme though.
Yeah, yeah, it's a pretty good encapsulation of the same problem we're having here with teams, and that's something that I'm trying to wrap my head around in terms of, like, are these systems and are we collectively going to start to change our minds on teams? So with that in mind, like, do you kind of see yourself more as, like, the reactionary, like, 538 sort of thing where, like, you see a team off to a hot start, you're really willing to believe it? Or do you tend to kind of place yourself more in that Fangraphs bucket of riding it out, assuming things will come back to normal and that the White Sox will, beat the Twins to the AL Central pennant or whatever?
Well, I don't think the White Sox are going to catch the Twins, because I think people were just under projecting the Twins to begin with.
That's fair.
I'm more of someone to kind of ride out what I originally believe in.
All right.
I'm so... not one to I'll see the data at first and, like, what makes sense there, and until it takes, you know, as we were talking about before, the sufficient sample size, enough amount of data where it's like, okay, yeah, like, things might not actually change.
I feel like the missing ingredient to that conversation then is maybe just, like, a sufficiently spicy, like, baseline level of expectations that you're willing to stick to or something like that.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it comes with, especially when talking about team projections, like, everyone has a polarizing opinion about a specific team.
Right, right.
And it's harder to do that about a specific player. Like, I have no, you know, emotional reason for why I believe Yandy Diaz's OBP is going to stick for the rest of the year. Like, I just...
See, that's what makes you different than me. I have some weird emotional connections to, like, players I've staked out takes on, and, like, I have to really turn it off. It's rough.
I do as well, but it's not nearly as overwhelming as the 30 MLB teams.
Okay, that's fair. I had a second part of this, and I'm going to run through it a little bit quicker. The part two here is the, like the flip side of, like, the wins instead the playoff odds differences. So which three teams' playoff odds do you think these systems disagreed on most? We've done all the preamble about why they disagree. Who do you think, and I'll give you some credit, sorry, some context here, not credit. 8.5% is, like, the difference here. Between these different, like, will they make the playoff odds? Oh, and just a reminder for you, those of you guys who forgot, there are going to be 12 playoff teams this year, right? We got three wild card slots. It does change some things slightly. So you're like, how does anyone that is on this list have a shot or not have a shot? That is part of this. So who do you want to guess they're disagreeing most on for playoff races?
I will first guess the Red Sox.
I think that's not a bad guess, but I don't think they quite made it. They were just a little bit below the cutoff. So 51% for 538 versus 53%. Nope, they're very much in the line with each other. Their percentages just changed this year. So I saw that line graph, and that's in my head. I'll give you another shot here. Let's just get three in total here. See if you can get any of them.
I'll go with the Braves.
I believe they are second on their, no, they did not make it. They're right in that bunch. They're really close. I need to, like, remember to look at my notes whenever I put these down. Yeah. So, 74% from Fangraphs and, from 538, they are, let's see if I can find their logo on my list. 66%. So yeah, they're close, but not, but they just, like, barely fell under. So I think they're, like, probably, like, fifth or sixth here. I, like, didn't pull this in a list manually where I have it, like, 1 through 30. I'm, like, having to go back and do it again because it's weird.
Yeah, no, I see how you have it wonderfully crafted, hidden in white text on a Google sheet.
it's definitely a little
high production value.
I love to make a podcast a visual medium, you know?
Yes.
One last shot here.
My next guess, I'm just running through second place and third place teams that are like...
That's basically the thought, right? Yeah.
So, I don't think it's anyone at the top or at the bottom, so I'm going to go with my Cardinals.
They are third, so it will give you credit as 1-for-3. 56.7 versus 65, so 538 is a little bit more in favor of the Cardinals playoff odds here, which I should note, the central divisions across the board are all kind of like a somebody has to make it, but not more than one somebody seems to be the statistical odds. Do you think the Cardinals can or will win their division?
I don't think they're going to win the division. I think they'll get to 84 wins at a minimum. It depends on everyone else if that's going to get them a wild card spot.
I
do know that Fangraphs historically has always underprojected the Cardinals. I think the Cardinals, it's at least 5 and definitely probably more, I don't remember the stat, have overperformed their Zips projections and Zips run total. So Fangraphs has always been down on them, whether that's devil magic or whatever you want to credit the Cardinals' success to being, that's probably it. But I think they'll put themselves, you know, last weekend of the season with a chance, but that'll be about it.
I imagine that has to be a non-terrible place to be. They are projected for 86 and 88 wins, respectively, from Fangraphs and 538. So your 84 is actually probably a bit low for what would get them in, I think. The NL West has some really bad teams. I think that's really changing some things. That said, the Giants are the ones that they're disagreeing with second most, which I guess makes sense. Fangraphs is kind of holding firm that last season wasn't a fluke, and 538 says, hey, where did all of your good players go? Whereas the Guardians are kind of just snuck in by some like weird fluke-ish stuff, are 19 versus 30%. So I'm kind of the mind that 19 and 30% sound like nothing way too often. Like 19% is Joey Gallo. 30% is, you know, take your pick there, but we don't project people to hit 300, but, you know, I guess go ahead and say Whit Merrifield if it makes you feel happy. But, like, in my mind, it's like, yeah, I think they're not going to make it. And it's interesting kind of how that goes. So,
yeah, I wonder actually if that's a byproduct of, as you said earlier, the Fangraphs, you know, sticking to what they did earlier,
mm-hmm.
and 538 adjusting for the Angels, who seemingly locked up a wild card spot a month and a half into the season. It looks a little different now.
Yeah, that's probably a pretty good take on all of this. So I thought this was a fun kind of way to like start to put our eye on these sorts of things. Going into the season, like, who was your like spicy take about who would or wouldn't make the playoffs? Is there like one team that kind of came to mind that you're like ready to stake out a position on, you know, 2 months ago?
I had the Twins winning the AL Central going into the year.
Is that exclusively or just in part because of Tony La Russa managing the White Sox?
It's partly that, which is bad because I lightly root for the White Sox as my second favorite team because I'm from Chicago.
And root against the Cubs.
But, and, you know, obviously root against the Cubs. It helps. But I don't know. They had a lot of high variability guys, and I haven't been the biggest fan of their pitching staff. And I'm not the biggest fan of Tony La Russa. I'm not sure how he ended up back managing, especially that White Sox team, but also the Twins are fun. I really like Joe Ryan. He's fun to watch pitch, and the offense kind of makes it work. And I think they'll be able to hold through, assuming Buxton is able to actually get healthy, because it seems like he's trying to play through injury.
Never fun. My family's from Winnipeg. So like the Twins were the local team for some of them. And like, there was some good feelings there that like people I've met who are Twins fans long since any of that have all been some great folks. And I just feel like that's a team that I've always been kind of ready to cheer for, especially at the expense of whoever else, you know, I like to see the Dolans fail in Cleveland. I like to see, like, the White Sox tumble a little bit too often, I will admit, to any of my White Sox cheering friends, who are, like, there are a lot of good White Sox folks online. Unfortunately, you know, I just find myself kind of cheering against, like, teams with bad ownership, and there are just a lot of those they play, so that's a
reason. As a former St. Louis Rams fan, and now, I know you're a soccer fan. I don't know how many soccer fan listeners we have, but I am strongly anti-Stan Kroenke and the Rams, the Colorado Avalanche, the Nuggets, Arsenal. I totally understand that.
I appreciate you fighting the good fight there. Yeah, I feel like going into the season, the only team that I felt pretty strongly like, no, it's not going to work, was probably Atlanta. And like, the data kind of seems like they aren't awful and might get better. And again, that was just very much like a who's pitching for them, also who's hitting for them, also all of y'all are just definitely drinking the they just won the World Series so they must be good Kool-Aid. And yet, like, I kind of feel like the level-headed folks are like probably like, you know, they're kind of what we thought they were, maybe a little bit better. So that's kind of like the it just wasn't spicy one way or another. I wasn't disastrously wrong yet, and like as a result, I'm willing to ride that takeout a little bit more than I need to. I just don't know who else in the National League is going to take a playoff spot away from them. So, you know, it's weird. Like it when you go down the list and you're like, I want to like stake out some position. I want to disagree with these odds. I want to disagree with these standings. Like you just kind of run out of takes you can have. Cause as you said, there's only like 30 teams and 12 of them get in. So,
but I think a lot of that's to when we were looking at the projected win-loss totals, mm-hmm. and four games seems like a lot. It is when you want to put a stake into like a hot take that has that when you want them, when you think the Mets may win 90 games when they're projected to win 95, you don't like, that doesn't sound like a lot,
but
it's actually a significant right? difference. Yeah.
I guess I hadn't wrapped my head around like the these teams are projected for like half a game different between these two systems, and yet like the playoff outcomes that are gigantic. Like we think about that all the time in terms of like how much a dollar calculator will spit out for so and so in the preseason. We think about that like greatly when it comes to like should I draft this guy in the second or the first or the fifth and all that sort of stuff. So it's interesting to kind of turn that table and just turn my head on in that sort of way. We will get to some dudes, finally, our favorite pastime here and everywhere in the baseball podcasting community. But before that, we're going to take a very quick break.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, Nate, we're back. Trying to turn the conversation a little bit from teams, which I think was a pretty good kind of like window into your mindset and also like the fun stuff of all this. That's not just, did I lose my matchup this week? I'm interested in taking a look at which players the first third of the season have like really forced us to change our opinions the most. I don't really want you to just take a victory or defeat lap, though if you're really ready to put on your joggers and go for it, go for it. I kind of want to just like continue to take a window into like how someone else who's like wants to dig into Savant pages as much as I do is going at this, because we're not like doing it exactly the same, but I know that we ended up drafting a few of the same guys to our detriment or not this offseason. Let's kind of just take that as like a step back. In terms of like trying to figure out if a guy has been good and if you're willing to buy into them, you said you look a lot into Savant and Fangraphs and stuff. So like, what does like a, I don't know, pick your poison on a guy and what that take journey might look like, and talk me through like what you care about most.
I think what I care about most, I mean, obviously it's split between looking at hitters and looking at pitchers. I think most importantly for pitchers, my go-to stat, well, not a Savant stat, is simply strikeout percentage minus walk percentage. I think it is such a telling stat of, you know, how many productive strikeouts is this guy getting? Is the command enough to make it work? And almost like 90% of the time, a good strikeout minus walk ratio means that a pitcher is doing well. The weird case of that was, I was actually looking at today, was Dakota Hudson, whose 3.8% strikeout minus walk percent is by far the worst in baseball among qualified starters. He has a sub-3 ERA. It really does not make any sense, other than that the Cardinals have a really good defense and he's one of the best ground ball inducing pitchers in baseball.
It's so funny.
That's poor command in a sinker baller. It doesn't make sense from a tools perspective of fantasy baseball and baseball in general.
So are you someone who uses the PL player pages at all?
Yeah, I use the player pages pretty consistently. I usually go to Savant first. I just have been, I think, Pavloved into going to Savant pages first. But number two is now the pitcherless player pages over Fangraphs. It's a great place, and I love the best part, I think, is honestly the game logs. The game logs and the pitch breakdowns of per start is usually a couple of extra clicks wherever else you go, but we have it kind of right there at the ready, which is so helpful.
Know, even as like Kool-Aid drinkers as ourselves, it's probably important to say, like, I know what I want from different places. Like, there are things I will go to Fangraphs for sure. There are like three things I will go to Baseball Reference for. It's a very short list. It's pretty much all like team stats. I like the way they like lay out some like really ridiculous and small things. And then also sometimes I just want to know when like F4 is lying to me. But like, it's good to kind of know that. I pulled up Hudson's page as kind of just like here's a dude that I don't think either of us care deeply about for any sort of fantasy reason. That's an interesting thing. Yeah, so you said it was like 3.7%?
Yeah, 3.8%, I think. Yeah,
he's got... I remember I pulled something up earlier, and he was, like, at the very bottom of the list, too. He is 171st among starting pitchers in hard contact rate. That's bad. So, and 10th in ground ball rate. So you can see there is one good thing among, like, the red bars that Nick Pollock and co. have, like, laid on this page. And that is actually something, like, I don't have a great scale for. Ground ball rate, so I have to like make sure that I have something like this to tell me is that good, because you know it's important. I think K-BB is really easy for that at this point for me. Like 20-ish% is kind of like the cliff where yeah, this guy's actually doing pretty well. I trust it. I mean, it's not everything, but I think Jeff Zimmerman regularly says like 90% of everything can be predicted by it, and like I'd hope we can beat that, but like if we can't, that's pretty good. It doesn't predict 90% of everything. It's just like 90% of the predictive power that we have comes from K-BB.
Yeah, it's a really good stat, and it's, I think, fascinating in the sense that it's such a simple stat, like on the surface level, and what we have access to, and the fact that it works is pretty cool. And it's
do you have
super
any like,
easy
emotional
to use.
Opinions about like K? To BB ratio as a result of like your exposure to this? I guess again, getting into the real nerd hours here, but like, does K over BB like bother you in the same way that it bothers me as a result of this?
Yes, the like the per nine stats and the ratio, like it's just I just kind of avoid it and I go out of my way to not see it because I know it will either A, confuse me because I have no baseline for what they are, or B, just frustrate me. I'm like, I'm not supposed to be here. I'm here for other numbers.
It's really a product of like what we've consumed and like the fake Billy Bean reactionary, like we're so smart, people like us, you know, like can't digest everything in the same way as people who've grown up on it. And it's interesting to talk to people. They're like, yeah, I just know what a good K per nine is and I feel comfortable with it. And like, K per nine is just how many of your outs were strikeouts, which doesn't even like make you better necessarily. It does kind of, but like, it's
weird. it's also super, at least as a kid when I grew up playing baseball, yeah, it was super easy K per nine. You had a K per nine higher than nine, you were striking out more than one guy an inning, and that was considered good.
It's nice.
And I think it's nice. I've gotten into the fantasy baseball space super quickly and getting adjusted to one, the stats that everyone uses, but also figuring out why they use them, I think is one of the most important things. I really enjoy all of the articles that are like, we're thinking about stat XYZ wrong, and like the actual research behind why things matter and why things are actually used is really interesting and actually furthers the fantasy baseball.
Now, this is
discourse.
Definitely a question for the Keith Olbermans and the other folks out there. Did you actively think about your launch angle as you swung as a kid? Were you trying to ex-woba as much as you could?
Of course, obviously. I was, you know, I was out there with a protractor, swinging the T-ball.
In all seriousness, how much baseball did you actually play? I'm kind of curious.
I played a decent amount. I played all the way up through high school, tried to play in college. That didn't work. Then in a rec league game... This is a very fun story, and I almost hate that I'm telling this on air of a podcast, but in the summer of 2020, in a rec league game, I threw somewhere north of 150 pitches, struck out 16 in a 7-inning game, so we'll take that, but my elbow has not been the same ever since, and I'm hopefully dealing with that eventually, but it's... That's where the baseball adventure starts and ends.
I'm almost speechless at that. That's incredible. I wish I'd asked that at the top, but I think that kind of like explains a little bit of like the when I read your stuff, there's definitely like a I'm going to throw some video because you want some video. I never pull images of like make people swings and stuff like that because like I don't know what I'm looking for. I quit playing baseball in about sixth grade. I started playing baseball in about fourth grade and I wore rec specs. You can probably imagine how many hits I got.
I also wore rec specs. So it's part of the experience. I think it added to the weird lefty pitcherness that I had.
I bet.
So it all kind of like Joe Kelly-esque, if you will, with rec specs, but also a small child. Oh, so
okay. I think that gives me a pretty good window into like what you're looking for. I pulled up your novel red piece like earlier today to like just see it again, and there's a gif in there where like it like the first second or so is just like someone eating a hot dog like, before it like goes back to the game, and it is so funny to me.
That's just my poor gif editing skills.
It was definitely like better as a result of it. Okay, with that kind of better window in mind, I want to ask like the opposite question. Like, what's like the bad angel on your shoulder, or like sort of like bad habit stats or like data sources or like habits you have that you have a hard time ignoring when it comes to like managing teams and like evaluating people?
I think I have a really bad track record of going based on age right now. I think we've seen a massive shift in prospects and their development. I don't know if it was because of the pandemic and the missed minor league season, or just the product of we've now gotten out of the Juan Soto, Fernando Tatis Jr., Ronald Acuna, who just were stars the second they started hitting the ball. But like, that's not how it goes for all of the top prospects. Like, you look at the one of my favorite things to do is if you go into MLB Pipeline, go back. I don't know how far, but you can see some of the top 10, top 15 prospects. And there are some names you're like, wow, he turned out to be like a, you know, everyday player for someone. Just not great, not phenomenal, but still a serviceable player. And I think that we're really expecting the world. And with that, I've often found myself drafting guys too hard. I'm still a believer in Jared Kelnick.
I didn't bring that piece up.
As well as maybe this is in the league that we're both in. I'm a believer in Gavin Lux and Joe Adell. But it's prospect development is different for everyone. And I don't think the industry as a whole has recognized that. It's either you're taking the world by storm to start or you're a complete bust.
I have up the 2011 rankings, which are the earliest they go back, which is Mike Trout number one, I should note. So they basically have all of baseball history that matters up here. The top five prospects on this list are Mike Trout, Jeremy Hellickson, Bryce Harper, Dominic Brown, and Dustin Ackley. Some other big names towards the top 25 or so is Aroldis Chapman, Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer. We have Mike Montgomery, Will Myers, Freddie Freeman, Jameson Taillon, Zach Britton, Martin Perez, Manny Machado, and Chris Sale are all in the top 25. So those are some good names. Yeah.
So yeah, it's a good mix of some good names, but also some guys who either A, just completely flamed out, or became regulars for
here,
a few years.
Matt Moore, Brandon Belt, who's good. Like, I'm just like, wow, they did a pretty good job. And then you see like Tyler Matzek and you're like, oh yeah, he had an okay career. Like Aaron Hicks as a top. It just like blows my mind to think that Aaron Hicks was like a top prospect, but like, wasn't everyone kind of in their own way? Most of people were highly rated. Like,
you have to be like, yes, baseball's a massive, massive sport with however many leagues, but you still need to be the best of the best to actually get the call, which I don't think people
that's a good window, actually. I keep saying that. That's like a weird way to think. That's a good thing to look back into, like, using that metaphor differently. You know, like what sort of nonsense what we were doing a decade ago. I'm sure the scouting's gotten better though also, so we probably have a better idea of who should be good. And yet, like, you look at that list and like, most of those guys were actually pretty much fine. So I think that's a good sort of nerve calming, but also I do not know how many years it took Brandon Belt to be a really good player, and it may have been way more than he wished at times.
I also think it's an accessibility thing. Like, there are so many more minor league games that are broadcast, and we have access to those stats. We're like, I just read a great piece on The Athletic talking about Mike Trout playing for, I forgot which minor league team, but it was one of his stops before he became I think it was Iowa, where everyone there knew he was the best player, but obviously it hadn't hit, you know, the full baseball world, and obviously the baseball world, the digital baseball world, has grown so much recently.
There was a great image or tweet from that. Yeah, the piece there is the Angels' Mike Trout became a superstar during one Iowa summer, a time we'll never forget. There is a bit in there is like how did he get all that extra power? And he's like eating steaks and drinking Pepsi, and like, yeah, that's clearly the secret to this all. All right, so let's go ahead and get into some guys here. The first question that I want to ask. It's like, which player so far this year has kind of forced you into changing your opinion most? I'll let you do one, and then I'm going to do one. So far, I guess we've only had 55 games or so. Who has like swayed things most for you?
Maybe this is the Cardinal bias, but
really?
Tyler O'Neill.
Talk me through that, because I kind of just feel like he's been hurt.
Yeah.
Like, has there been something else in there that's been scary for you?
He did go down. He did go down with an injury, and I was never honestly a massive fan.
The OBP wasn't great, right?
The eye test. It was just he looked overmatched a lot of the time on his swings and misses, and his whiff rate was always awful. And it's like, guys will figure it out once he's able to figure it out. And last year, he figured it out. He hit 287 with awful plate discipline, which is pretty hard to do outside of like Tim Anderson, who swings at everything.
Tim Anderson's strikeout night rate has like cratered this year, and in the good way, to almost nothing. So yeah, I think you've got to be like a freak like him to make anything even close to that possible. God.
And I think pitchers, I don't have the exact info in front of me on what pitchers are throwing that have actually got him to struggle a bit, but it's like, oh, okay, you know, this isn't that great, and I think we've already seen a ceiling. I realize that's not exactly the question you asked, but it's probably one of the people that I think their stats have most solidly impacted my opinion I had on them going into the year.
You were a little bit out. Was it more just like the way that you're able to kind of like feel about all of that has changed and like, okay. Yeah. I feel like I get that.
And I think it's more that okay. I'm way out now. Granted, he's now had two hits last night and he's homered tonight on,
So that's Wednesday, how it happens. You're instantly wrong the second you deliver a take. And that's just the rule. Yeah, so his X batting average last year was .279. And his actual batting average last year was .286. And you're like, oh, that sounds pretty good, right? The sort of stuff that I'm always looking at that I'm like a little bit off, his like sweet spot rate last year jumped from like a career like not very good to like a way above league average and probably unsustainable 39.9% rate. Like 33 is average. If you're sitting around 40, that's like standard deviation plus. And if you're a guy with a big whiff rate who's got a really good sweet spot rate, either you got mad lucky or you're actively guessing. Either way, you're probably getting figured out, I feel, or something's coming back to earth. He has actually kept up the line drives and sweet spot. He's like sitting like a 30% line drive rate this year. And the strikeout rate's basically exactly the same. He's just not hitting the ball hard. It's kind of the odd thing. That doesn't feel like it should be right, though. I'm assuming you've seen some of these plate appearances from him. Like, has it just been like, I can't square up mentally how he's squaring it up, but not also not hitting it hard when he swings like I think he does. Do you have any thoughts about how that could even all be possible?
It's a lot of not accidental contact, but he's putting the ball in play on swings he's not. Trying to, or they should be swings and misses, where it turns out to be something that's a little squibber. Or you know, I mean, we've all seen his massive forearms, but he just gets the barrel on the ball and dinks it as a fly ball out to right field when it could be a lot better. And it seemed like he wasn't comfortable at the plate, and I don't know if he had an injury that it finally took them a little bit to do something about before he went onto the IL, but maybe he's figured it out, and I'm about to eat my words, which as a Cardinal fan, hopefully.
I'm like looking at some of his rolling charts, and it's like it's trending down still. Yeah, that's an interesting sort of thing where it's like if I'm looking at what I would expect to be believable, like the strikeout and walk stuff is the same as last year. Does that scare you more or less? Well, it was really bad last year, and he did a lot of things that aren't supposed to be sustainable. And then it's like the things that are supposed to have kept up haven't kept up, and the stuff that was supposed to break didn't break. That is such a confusing profile. So I was actually going to ask you in a moment, the next one I was going to get to is like, which players are you most indecisive about? This would actually be exactly the sort of dude who would fit into that for me. I wouldn't be like full sell, like get this guy away from my team and maybe away from my league sort of panic mode or anything like that, but like I would definitely not be able to piece all this together. It's also really funny to me that you brought him up, because the guy I had is like, I'm most willing to be like out on. I am like most ready to be like, yeah, this is it. I'm done. Was Joey Gallo, who it's not the same, but isn't it in its own kind of strange way?
But it is. I saw that on the rundown and I was looking into the numbers and it's like, I don't know. It's the stats and the underlying numbers seem like he's not. There isn't that much that has changed.
I agree with you, actually.
But I think similar to O'Neill in that he's doing a bunch of things that are unsustainable. How much faith do you want to put into a guy who at his peak can hit .210?
And like, it's so funny to say, it's like, oh, that's so backward. Aren't we too young to say that sort of stuff? Or however, like, nonsense you want to say it right there. Right? The thing that was kind of like the big, like, oh, aha moment for me is like, he's always been a big walk rate guy. And like the numbers that I like to look at for like hard contact or barrels for PA do get affected by a high walk rate. You should like add them together in some way, you know, like hard contact plus walks is a nice, like how many of your plate appearances were good metric. And he's often been really good by that. Last year he walked 18% of the time. That's really good. Hard contact 21% of the time sounds bad. Beat added together, that's 40% of plate appearances that are like a pretty good event for you. This year, he's lost a third of those walks. And like, he's hitting the ball hard a reasonable amount, but it's kind of just the same old, same old. The result has been a .288 OBP. And like, you say yourself, like, shouldn't he be like doing well in the Yankee Stadium? They get that like sweet short porch. He doesn't need a short porch. He just needs like confidence and contact, right? And it's such like a backwards way of thinking about it, but he's got 6 home runs, he's got 10 RBI, and like it just nothing is clicking right now in terms of like what it all looks like. And I think I'm having this aha, no, this is actually what bad looks like, just because in 2019 when like the world was broken, he was able to hit he had 253 that year.
Oh yeah, I mean, then exactly. Again, who didn't?
Exactly.
I was pulling up, I don't know that it's either time's moving fast or whatever, but how absurd Pete Alonso's 2019 is. 53 homers and solid batting average. Cool. It's ridiculous. So
with that like big confidence and like absolute clarity moment out of the way, I want to kind of flip the script and ask then, who has like confused you most this year? Who's been like the hardest for you to kind of like get a good read on?
Jeff McNeil.
I can't imagine having a strong opinion about Jeff McNeil as it is no longer 2019. That was his big year, right?
That was his big year, and then it fell apart, and now of course it was. It's back.
He doesn't sound like he should be back this year. Isn't the ball dead?
He still has a really good strikeout rate, and he's hitting like 3-something on fastballs, I think. And it's seemingly coming together for him. Yeah. Even with bad exit velocity stats and bad hard contact rates, it's still kind of working, and I don't exactly understand.
Yeah, the Mets as a whole have kind of succeeded without like crushing the ball. I've just been like really good at spray distribution or whatever you want to call it, just hitting it where they ain't or whatever. I guess that's why they pay $250 million to these guys, is because they're really good at that skill or something. But yeah, I have a spray chart up, and it's like it's all over the place. He's got some really funny doubles right over the first baseman's head, and some funny doubles right over the third baseman's head, and a whole lot of singles and a lot of other random spots. And he has like not. I think he had a home run in the first game, like not the first game of the season, but like in that first series against the Nats. Yeah, second game of the season when I was there, he had a home run. And since then, it's kind of just been a bunch of stuff everywhere. It doesn't feel like he should be good in this run environment, though, right? Like, I get exactly why that's odd. He has 27 RBI.
Yeah, he's a very much a viable fantasy player, and I am very confused by him.
I feel like the wait what reaction is the best part of this. Is this a great kind of find of in its own way? Also, his like background photo. You know, you get your headshot, and then there's like the background photo on Savant. Is just like the most pained and odd photo I've seen online for a baseball player in a hot minute. That is a really good grab. Yeah, he's sitting on roughly 2 barrels per PA. Yeah, that's bad. I can't imagine that if you need to like win home runs or steals, he's really all that helpful. But at the same time, like the volume stats are there, and that has to be like a guy that's absolutely saving people who are running the people who are acting like prime Joey Gallo out there as well. So that's a fun one to bring up. I don't know. Do you roster him anywhere?
I think I have him rostered in one league, but it was, I went out of my way to go pick him up because I noticed it and he was available there. Nice. And then didn't do it anywhere else. And I was like, oh, I don't really need either the second base. Cause I was able to get Jazz Chisholm basically in all of my leagues, which has worked out very nicely. Mm-hmm. But I've been fine without him for the most part, but he's still a weird fantasy relevant player.
Yeah, Jazz was on my these bad line drive stats shouldn't hold up radar for me in this offseason. He had like something like the same like launch angle standard deviation as Wander Franco, and I was like, okay, so shouldn't he hit some line drives eventually? And like I don't know if that's an exact science. I need to look into that. Like I do, but I was like, he should probably have a better batting average, and maybe he gets better. And it has been just delightful to be like wrong in the should have been more firm about that take. So that's a good call out. Interestingly, a guy who's going in the same range as him has kind of been my most confused player so far this year, and that's Carlos Correa. You know what? Carlos Correa is like in the top five in hard contact rate in baseball right now. He's been crushing the ball. And like nothing has gone right for him.
I did actually know that, but purely from an unlucky basis. And that for some reason, I feel like we haven't heard much about him from the Twins.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you might think to yourself, it's like, okay, there haven't been that many home runs. Is he like hurt? No, if you go to pitcher list, he's 13th in hard contact rate. But I set my bar for like qualification, whenever I do like my Savant search for this, because I have like a couple of them just bookmarked. So like if you cut it to like 150 PA or something like that, I'm sure he sneaks back into the top 10. But yeah, like strikeout and walk rate are like roughly like the slightly verse version of like where he'd been before, but like by a point or two. So like I'm going to call that normal. He has the same batting average as he's ever had. He just hasn't hit home runs. And yet this is like his best hard contact. And it's like the barrels are roughly there as much as they've ever been too. I imagine the move away from the tiny juice box park he used to be playing in was like a real reason to be out on him, but like this seems a bit extreme, right? So I just thought this is like one of those, like, I was taken aback by like him popping up because I thought he'd been doing poorly. And so I looked a little bit closer. And the thing that kind of stood out to me is that his fly ball rate has gone down a lot. He's on a 22% and up to a 52% ground ball rate. So he's not quite like Dakota Hudson, but as a batter. I love to think about that, by the way. It's like
I don't know that one. I'm just trying to imagine who Dakota Hudson the hitter is, and I'm not sure.
I think Dakota Hudson as the hitter is the caricature of Vlad Guerrero Jr. as like in his rookie year when he was just like hitting everything to the ground, or maybe it's like super prime Yandy Diaz. Either way, it's something like that. Probably.
Yeah, no, I think rookie Vlad Guerrero is a good one, where just he's hitting everything that's, you know, bouncing or just not even where close to the strike zone, and it's working. I think that's how a lot of people feel about Dakota Hudson, where it's like, I even see it on Nick's start, who to start, who to sit for each of his starts. It's like, well, you know, it's a toss up. No one really knows like what to do with him, mm-hmm. but it's working and it shouldn't be.
Yeah. I should note kind of the last thing about Correa. He's hit it at a 360 BABIP. I do actually think that given how much he's scorching the ball, that BABIP's partially deserved, but like the best you're going to get, I think, if he's continuing to like put it onto the field in this way, it's just some hope that he has someone on base in front of him. But yeah, he's at 150 PA, 35 games, kind of like a little bit of a shortened stint so far, and he's sitting on 3 home runs and a total of 33 counting stats right now, and that's like, you know, quadruple that or so. It's not quite science, right? But like, that's ugly. So it's kind of like a really confusing thing. We don't have a ton longer here, but I do want to make sure we can kind of end on a nice high note. Any spicy off-season takes that you feel way stronger about?
I was big on Benintendi. This was mostly behind, I think it was the Bad Axe projecting him to have a really good batting average. Mm-hmm. And I looked into it a little bit, and I thought it was going to hold. Just the big park in Kansas City actually bodes well for him. He's not a big power guy. And I was like, oh, he seems like a guy that not a lot of people were in on. And I was able to get him at the back end of a lot of drafts as my third outfielder. Mm-hmm. And that has played out beautifully. He's been fantastic as a batting average guy.
I also just am really happy for him personally. Like, I feel like if you come into the league as a top prospect for a really good team and like get all this expectation on you, it's a weird thing. Also, he has that, like, beating the Astros on that diving catch play, like, already, like, in his back pocket. Like, I just want a guy like that to, like, have a fun couple of seasons and then get paid, and I'm really happy that he's, like, getting all of that. And, like, the weird bizarro, don't go to the super team. In fact, go to what is apparently the worst team in baseball and ball out sort of space. So, yeah, he's a guy that, like, I wanted to have that guy on my roster somewhere. And unfortunately, I only have like one share of him, and instead got like a bunch of the other like projected for somewhere between 15 and 20 steals and home runs guys, which is like Robbie Grossman, which has just been gross. So that's a good one to also be in on, because I feel like the process is pretty good there. I want to make sure that any PitcherList people are really aware of this one thing that I've been screaming about in different platforms, which is Nick finally moved Walker Buehler farther down on the list than Chris Bassitt. And in the offseason, I had worked on my ERA model a little bit, and Chris Bassitt and Walker Buehler came out about the same in terms of projected ERA. They were both about 3.7, and they had roughly the same strikeout and walk rate and hard contact rate last year. And I was like, all right, this is a thing that I can be annoying about. And unfortunately, I've just been right instead of annoying. So Buehler tumbled down into about 24 or so on the list, and Bassett's up a couple slots to 13. And I just want to say, Nick, if you're listening, and you should be, I'm proud of you, buddy. You're doing the right thing. I'm scared for Walker Buehler. I hope he's okay, as a pitcher, because something's he's off. He's got a 20% strikeout rate right now, and nothing is working. And I hope he figures it out, because I actually really liked watching him pitch, but something is really off, and I'm worried.
He's fun to watch when he pitches, and it's really weird because the velocity isn't down. It still looks like, on the surface level, if you watch one of his starts, it appears that the stuff is all there. But for some reason, it's just not clicking.
Yeah,
and
his pitching bot scores have been pretty good. Are you a pitching bot guy?
Yes, I'm becoming a pitching bot guy.
That's kind of
I only like a month or so ago actually went to the site and did a little deep dive myself, and understanding the incredible pitch grades and resources that are there. But I don't think that I think it's correct that his fastball is really struggling for some reason.
Yeah.
And
I just don't know why. I think he was, at one point, a guy who was one of those vertical approach angle darlings, in addition to having a really good velo number, right? So it's the shape's there, and it's the nice modern fastball, and it's just been lit up basically for the past 2 years. If you started watching baseball at the beginning of last year, Walker Buehler would not be an ace in your mind other than his ERA. He would be not quite Dakota Hudson, right? And unfortunately, a couple other guys who are in that profile that also have faded have been coming back to earth. But Buehler's the one where it's I hate how much I feel like I'm right in some ways, because I don't want to be this right on a guy who's this fun in theory.
Well, it's really interesting. I just pulled up his Savant page, and it appears that he knows that the fastball isn't great. And I think he's just potentially learning how to become a different pitcher.
Mm.
In 2020, he threw the fastball 53% of the time. In 2021, he threw it 44% of the time, and now this year he's throwing it 33% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
He has just tanked the usage of it entirely, and he's basically replaced it by throwing all of his off-speed more, but primarily he's jumped the cutter up. And
baseball's becoming
a slider league, it's also becoming a cutter league. And I think if he finds a way to actually command the cutter, which by looking at his heat maps, he's throwing almost exclusively glove side, which isn't the best place to only be throwing your cutter. You need to show just a little bit more command of it.
Mm-hmm.
He could have a potential resurgence. He's still really young.
Yeah.
And I think he's got a chance to have maybe this is a stretch, but a buy low, if you will. I think he still has the potential to get back to that acedom that he once had.
Yeah,
it's just gonna take a little bit more tinkering.
Yeah, he's younger than Joe Musgrove. I love that. And you bring up Musgrove's a 29% fastball, good amount of cutter, everything kind of works, guy, except he throws 92 instead of 95 plus. He's sitting 95 this year. 97 is where Buehler was in 2020 and before, when he was really good. So he has lost a couple ticks, and then in that time since he's lost those ticks, the fastball's gotten lit up. So I know that the big drop off that you should be absolutely most scared of is from 95 to 93 in that part of the curve. But still, as you go from 97 to 95, it can't help you. So that's a good thing to look at. And I'm sure the Dodgers will talk to him in some smart-ish ways. That strikes me as a clubhouse and a pitching coaching staff that can try. So
yeah, it's also the Dodgers, and I'm guessing that they'll find a way to make it work. I don't think this is the beginning of the end for Walker Buehler.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. He's someone that I also like note that when you like look through his batted ball stats, like last year he had like a 22% line and drive rate, and I was like, that can't hold up. That's why he was so lucky. It's like, it's come back to earth ish, and his ERA hasn't like fully come back to earth. I guess he's a 3.8. I thought it was still like 3.3. He had a really bad start the other day, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He got lit up a little bit.
That was the Mets. Okay. Well, that tracks. All right. Well, I think that's a pretty good kind of like hour and a half of picking your brain and to try to figure out why I would or wouldn't trust you. And for the most part, I want to trust you. I like the way that you kind of like push me on some stuff in terms of like just like the basics of like go look at how people use pitches that I forget to do. So that's a nice reminder to like maybe care about where people throw stuff and what it is they throw rather than just something percent. I'm sure there's some old people out there who will be really happy to bring that up at every point. Do you have anything else you want to plug before we get on out of here?
Not really. I mean, be on the lookout for my articles in the Going Deep section. So, you know, as similar to this podcast, currently I'm working on a piece looking at the effectiveness of slow curveballs. So things thrown under 72, both from looking at the old guys in Wainwright, Greinke, and whoever, but also like the Chris Bassetts of the world.
He's not young either.
But for a guy throwing a curveball that slow, it's not because his arm's been taxed with 2,000 innings. But it is funny, the savant searches, if I don't put a minimum velocity on, I'll still get like Albert Pujols in the search queries because he was throwing curveballs with like 120 inches of vertical break because, you know, gravity.
XWO gravity really, really doing its work.
Yeah, be on the lookout for that. You can find me on Twitter tweeting about either Savant pages or the Cardinals at Nate Schwartz. S-C-H-W-A-R-T-Z. And you can also find me in the Pitcherless Discord. Join it. It's a great place to be.
All right. Well, I think that about wraps us up. I'm on Twitter at Chase_rate. And you can find our missing host, Matt Goodwin, there at The Corked Matt. You can also find our pod there at Dugout Study Hall, where you can send us questions. Please be sure to subscribe to both the Pitcherless Fantasy Baseball feed, where you can find us, as well as the Pitcherless Baseball podcast feed. Leave us a good review if you feel so kind, and if you haven't already, consider becoming a PL Plus member so you can harass us in the PL Discord. Thanks for listening, and you can catch both Matt and myself next time.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.